Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast on this glorious Monday evening. Lovely to have the sunshine out. We got Jed.
Yeah, man, what are you saying?
And we got Eddie as well.
Good afternoon. Good evening, I guess. Start 7:30 now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the vibes of Spurs very much not matching the settings outside, I've got to say.
I don't think it's a surprise to anyone who follows Spurs at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think if you're still listening to the Spurs pods at the moment, you're a bit of a glutton for punishment, to be fair. A lot of people have just completely turned off, including from like watching the games and stuff. I think we all, Eddie, I don't know about you so much, but I think we all like consume a lot of like pods content. Jed, where are you at with it? Are you just kind of, are you pretending football doesn't exist at the moment? What's your current state with football?
I mean, my current state with football is that I think it's become a bit of a soulless entity, to be honest. But for the meantime, I'm still enjoying football because I'm just not watching Spurs at the minute. And I know that's probably not a great thing for me to come on a podcast about Tottenham, where we might be discussing the game. But honestly, I've just been doing other stuff in my time. And I've been watching other games and I'm taking so much more joy from seeing what teams like Aston Villa are doing than, bro, I was out on Saturday and I had the notifications for the game just because obviously I don't not support Tottenham now, innit? Obviously, I still support Tottenham. So I had the notifications and I saw we scored. Nothing. I didn't feel anything. It's not a thing where I've like, I know that it's a lot of Spurs fans will be like, oh yeah, I'm done with it now. I'm done with it. And it's not like I've actively tried to be done with it. But after that Everton game, I just, something changed. And I felt like I've seen it way too many times with those players. And not watching the Bournemouth game or the Brighton game, honestly, it hasn't fazed me. And it's weird because last time I was on the pod, we did that conversation about obviously taking a step back from football. And just removing myself from all the noise of it, well, the Spurs noise of it anyway, I feel a lot better for it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's where I went wrong because I was kind of giving it the big uns on that pod, being like, yeah, I've picked up like other hobbies and stuff and life's better when you don't make your life about Spurs. But I think missing that Everton game was a bit, a massive L for me, to be honest, because I think that break allowed me to get invested again. And you two, if you saw me on the chat after Newcastle dropped points to Villa, you must have both been shaking your head like, oh, this guy is going to get himself into a world of trouble, because I was actually like getting optimistic again for whatever reason. I think it's because deep down, like we always say like, oh, we're done, we're going to turn off. But deep down, like Spurs is a huge, huge part of my life. And like, I can't turn off from it. So I watched the whole of the Brighton game. I watched the whole of the Bournemouth game. And I was back to that kind of that pit of misery in my stomach at the end of that result. Because, yeah, those are just the worst. Like those sucker punch losses, it's just absolutely awful. But, you know, I say sucker punch loss, but it wasn't. We didn't play well. We didn't play well.
It happens all the time, though. It happens all the time. We've seen you. How many times have you got to see it? How many times do you see it to keep putting ourselves through it? And I'm not saying, well, I don't know, innit? I don't know if I doubt I'm going to be done with Tottenham for the rest of my life. We could go and appoint a manager that I really like and I'm probably going to get sucked back in, which I probably will be. I just think I kind of had this feeling towards the end of last season. I remember specifically when we lost to Brighton at home. I was in the same position then when I was out. Didn't really care about the game because our form was so patchy and I felt like our season was done. So I think it's just that time of the season, this time of the year as well, where it's obviously staying lighter out, the weather's getting a bit nicer. So I'm just doing other things at the moment. But yeah, sorry to cut you off there, Cosmo, but I'm just so used to seeing it now that I don't have to watch it to keep seeing it over and over again.
Yeah. I'm sick. Yeah, and also you say that you can watch other football teams and take enjoyment from that. I would say for me, I've always primarily been a fan of Tottenham first and then football second. And like, if I watch like other teams, I'll watch it with like a vested interest where like,
yeah,
I want teams to drop points for Spurs and then do well. And I think one of the crazy things is now I have actually been watching a bit more football and been watching like other teams. And it's crazy to see teams that are actually like coached well, like what you were saying about Aston Villa. And we had this conversation when I was saying like, oh my God, like Ashley Young, he's 38 years old. And he looks brilliant as a right back. And we were just saying like that is the result of actually coaching your players rather than Conte's method of being like, oh, I need a team of 11 to 14, just proven winners, brilliant players, and then I can win stuff. Well, I think a lot of people could if they had 11 to 14 great players. I think, you know, like maybe not us, but maybe someone like David Moyes, he could win the league if he had 13 to 14 world-class players, you know? So it just goes to show that this whole back Conte, he's a brilliant manager, that was all a complete facade. Let's get into the meat and bones of it a little bit. I say the meat and bones, we're actually not going to analyse the game because, you know, as you alluded to, Jed, it's been the same for the whole season. So I don't think there's any point in actually analysing the game itself and analysing the tactics because it's pretty much the same every single week. But where I do want to start with is the fact that I think this is the most toxic Tottenham has ever been. And I always use Tim Sherwood as kind of the barometer for me. That was where I was most upset, most disconnected from the team. And this has surpassed it in every single way. And I never thought that was possible. Well, sorry, Eddie, I couldn't hear you there. What'd you say?
It's your personal pit of despair, that era of Spurs.
Oh, 100%. That's like the totem pole of shit. I always say it can never reach that again. But I think this is like the Burj Khalifa compared to that totem pole. I mean, everything about Spurs right now is rotten. So I think, you know, the way the clubs run, I think ultimately everything does come from the way the clubs run, from Levy at the moment. I think this is one too many mistakes. I think one too many mistakes came with the whole Paratici thing and not getting rid of Conte probably back in January. Now we're on like the 16th too many mistake. I think this is the most in crisis Tottenham have ever been in terms of board level. I think the way the fans are acting is the most fractious it's ever been. And I think it's got to the point where I was thinking about this earlier and I think it almost feels like a kind of Spurs have become like this whole like populist thing that we see in society where it's just a lot of people that are angry and don't really have an answer for anything. And they're just answering and their answer is just toxicity in terms of the way the fans are lashing out at players, lashing out at each other. This is not what football should be about. Football should be an escape. Football should be something to enjoy. But honestly, it all feels like very political almost at the moment. We don't have a manager. We don't have a ladies manager, a women's team manager. It's rotten. It's rotten. Eddie, I don't know if you want to build on top of that, but
yeah. Well, it's like building on a pile of rubble, isn't it? With the way that the clubs run, like you alluded to, Cosmo, it's come to a head. I think this is like the result of years and years of mismanagement, squad mismanagement, manager mismanagement. I think with the move to the new stadium, and it kind of started with the training grounds, but more the new stadium, the club has created this narrative now that we're in the upper echelons of football, that we're there now, we've got the stadium, we've got the training ground, we've got the, I don't know, £100 million players in Kane and so on. We're spending big money on Ndombele, stuff like that. And I think the club thought that they'd reached that point and completely negate that by sacking the manager that got them there. And when they let go of Poch and Then there was a frantic search. And then there was Mourinho, which was then part of that narrative. You know, we got rid of Poch, but we've got one of the best managers in club football. Even though it was clear that he was past his prime. And I think if you think about the squads that Poch left, the squad that Mourinho had, and then the squad that Nuno had briefly, now Conte, that squad has remained stale for the whole time through every single pitfall that squad has had, every FA Cup round 4 or 5 that they get knocked out of, every Europa League or Champions League competition that they get knocked out of, every top four race or title challenge. Any good team refreshes, any decent team refreshes. How could a team like Spurs not refresh that squad the core of that squad for nigh on a decade now? That stinks. It just stinks. It just stinks of poor mismanagement. It stinks of perceiving yourself to be a club that can spend the big money on a star up and coming midfielder in likes of Ndombele, and then say Eric Dier and Davinson Sanchez or whatever are good enough for the rest of the season. I don't want to bag on them too much, but the idea that we can kind of ignore some issues that are literally going to bite us in the ass during the season, to think that we can allow Lloris to age to the point in this squad where he is such a liability, to allow your targets to your best targets to get away from you in transfer windows. And this goes back to, you know, missing out on Grealish because we bid 3 million and Onomar for him. And then you have situations like Dybala where we couldn't sign him because of image rights. This is systemic bad management by the board. And then now what you're seeing is the result of that. The fact that we have to play the likes of Davinson Sanchez and Eric Dier every week now. And then they're on the end of, yes, some poor individual errors, but some of the best, you know, the best players of all time make individual errors. This is amplified by the fact that there is such fraction and discontent at the club. And then the only way that, because you can't voice your opinions to the board. You can't boo the boards. You can't shout abuse at the board. They're not there. But what you can do is you can boo the players. You can boo the managers. You can chant for other managers. You can completely slate the team. And how does a club function like that? It doesn't. When you look at and the only time it does function is if you're absolutely crazy super team like Real Madrid, where the fans are so fickle. But the team is so good and the managers they get are so good that it just doesn't matter because they will just win something around the corner. Tottenham are not Real Madrid. You can even see it with PSG. That team is not a good team. There's some great individuals, but they'll never get to where they want to be if they continue this way. And in a similar way, Tottenham are never going to be the club that they want to be because of systemic mismanagement. It's just a fact.
Yeah, and let's get on to the kind of what you alluded to there about the kind of the brunt of our frustrations being brought out on one player. And let's talk about the booing of Sanchez, which for me is just I don't even really know how to put it into words in terms of, I think it does link to what you were saying about the fact that we're not at the same stadium. We've got this new training ground and whatnot, because the way the fans have acted there, that's not the Tottenham Hotspur that I grew up with at all. I think of our fans booing players. I think the only time I can recall it was when Gali took his shirt off and stamped on the shirt. That's a reason to boo a player. I don't, for all his faults, don't get me wrong, Sanchez came on and he was absolutely dreadful. And he is a symbol of the mismanagement. The fact that he still has to play in a position that he's not comfortable with is complete negligence on the part of the board, arguably on the point of the manager and Stellini for even throwing him in there. But I really feel like we crossed the line in that moment. And I absolutely hated it, man. And I literally, I used to think back to when Arsenal booed Eboué and they brought him to tears. And from all accounts, what happened after was absolutely harrowing for Eboué. And his story after that, after he retired from being a football player, is really quite sad. Whether that booing had anything to do with it, I don't know. But I just feel like we really crossed the line, and it makes me think like, what has happened to the soul of this football club? Like, what do the fans actually believe in anymore? Because that was something that you just wouldn't have done that between, I'd say, 2006 and 2014. And now it's a regular occurrence. You get fans booing at half time all the time. We've had earlier this season fans booing Emerson Royale, which we were completely against. And sometimes there are moments where maybe you can boo a player if a player's clearly not trying. But Sanchez, okay, he's not fit for the system, but there's no way you can say he wasn't trying. The way that he made that mistake was he was sprinting back, and through the fact that he's not good enough, he's poked the ball through for a Bournemouth player to score, but he's not trying to do that. And then you see him when he comes off the pitch and the guy's in tears, just mentally completely going through it. And I found it really upsetting, to be honest. And it's another kind of branch to the fact of why I feel really disconnected from Tottenham at the moment. And I don't even know what the club is anymore. I don't know. It's definitely not the thing I grew up with. It's just not. It's not the same thing. Again, I feel like a massive aspect of that is the stadium, but I just don't feel connected with what I saw in terms of the way the fans were acting. That hurts more than the team being bad for me.
I agree. And I said to you guys on the weekend that, and again, I've said it now, I wasn't watching the game, so I didn't see it live. But when I saw you guys put in the chat that Sanchez has been booed, I was fucking furious, because, like you said, Cosmo, the fans boo every single half time, and at full time of pretty much every single game now. That's your way of showing the discontent for what the situation at the club. You don't then need to boo a single player for coming off, and we've done it multiple times now. We've done it to Ndombele, and if you're talking about reasons to boo, maybe it wasn't a good enough reason to boo, but when we were drawing to a League One side and you're strolling off the pitch like you've just...
You can understand that.
But like you said, he's not going out there and trying to purposely be bad. And I don't know if it's because... The thing is, with our fans, I think that they're all too happy to sit there and boo players. And say and do all these Enoch out tweets with the pound signs, which is probably, it's been said on other podcasts now, probably rooted in anti-Semitism. But if you're really that unhappy, why are you not joining in with the protests outside the ground? Everyone talks about how they want change and that they want these so-called parasite owners out of the club. But they would rather be in the stadium booing the players instead of going out and trying to make a movement happen. Not that it would necessarily get them out the door, but that's a bigger message than booing an individual player. It's fucking disgusting. And I think a lot of it has been amplified by the takeover of City, the takeover of Newcastle, the potential takeover of United. I think fans, and again, Cosmo, like you said, probably because we've moved into this shiny new stadium, we've got this training ground to go with it. And to be fair, we do pay very high season ticket prices as well. So I can understand that side of it. But I think they're just so desperate to keep up with everything going on around us. They're willing to sell their soul for that investment from these Gulf states and not really care about the realism of it. That's not the club Tottenham are, and that's not the club that we should be aspiring to be. I think it's just more. And another thing as well is that I think fans have got too used to their voice almost making a change in a way. we saw with the Nota Gattuso hashtag on Twitter. And I think Twitter fans are different to in-stadium fans. But then we also saw basically the booing of the Lucas Moura sub lead into the Nuno sacking. So I think where fans have got their way with certain decisions now, and obviously they were justified at the time, I think there's this sense of entitlement with them that they can just boo whatever they want and it's going to change anything. But it needs to be a group effort. The fans, don't get me wrong, I know the situation is pretty bad at the moment. It's hard to be positive, but booing individual players is not going to help anyone.
Well, this is the thing. Like, maybe when I say, you know, like your role as a supporter is to support the team and you should get behind the players, even if they're not good. I mean, there are times when you should boo, but maybe the whole contract between what it is to be a fan and the football club is dead, because maybe I'm being naive. Maybe that doesn't exist anymore. Maybe it doesn't really matter about supporting your club through thick and thin anymore. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm the naive one, and maybe it is just about wanting some billionaire owner to come and take us over and then win things. But given, you know, my history and my dad taking me to Spurs as a kid and kind of, you know, like those memories built with him and that connection to the area and the high road and whatnot, maybe that just doesn't exist anymore. Maybe that doesn't count for anything. Maybe I should be in the stadium just like booing people. And I do understand that people pay a lot of money, a lot of money. I mean, when Glenn told me about the season ticket prices, I was really in shock, to be honest. And maybe that's an excuse to then go in the stadium and kind of act like a bit of a prick, to be honest. But, you know, maybe I'm just not a fan of modern football anymore, because, like I say, this isn't what I grew up with. What do you think, Eddie?
Well, what my mind immediately goes to is the fact that during lockdown, we saw that the top clubs in Europe tried to hijack European football and create a Super League. And in those, is it 16 teams? Tottenham was one of those teams. So we need to remember that football is no longer the kind of grassroots working man's game that it was built upon. The social contract that you talk about, Cosmo, was built on the fact that working people, men, women, children, would go to their local football club on the weekend, support their team week in, week out, home and away. And it's just not, you know, and the capacity of stadiums was like 30,000 max, 40,000 max. And in the Premier League alone, you've got Old Trafford, Anfield, the Emirates, Spurs, all above 60K. I'm not sure about Anfield, but you know, these are clubs that now can, that are, they have the capacity to be full of tourists and full of casuals. And far be it from me to bag on people that want to watch football, but it's no longer that kind of that sport where the people around you are the same people you see every week, because that changes now. And it's just full of people that haven't suffered with the club. And so this situation that we're in now has led to such toxicity because it's, you know, like you said, such fracturous feelings within the stadium. And, you know, if we want to get into it, and like Glenn said, he wasn't available to do the podcast today, but some of that will be rooted in racism, anti-Semitism. Like, these are things that we could maybe talk about, but, you know, it's something that you have to really consider.
We should talk about it.
Yeah, it's something you really have to consider, because when it was, you know, when it's not anti-Semitism or racism towards black players, it's racism towards players like Son of Asian descent. And, you know, you get obviously people being upset with the likes of Eric Dier and Perisic, but the vitriol is completely different. The vibe is completely different. It feels a lot more about football than it does about players like Ndombele Sanchez, Sessegnon, Son. Like, maybe not Emerson. Son as much, but Emerson. The kind of the atmosphere is very, very loaded with, you know, with sentiments that are pretty disgusting. And that's just in the stadium. On socials as well, it's just completely toxic. And, you know, the people that go to the games and the people on social media are rarely the same people. But, like, one builds off the other. Like, the mood on social media is absolutely dire. The mood in the stadium is absolutely dire. But for very different reasons. Like, people on socials are, I think, want something that's completely ridiculous. And unrealistic of Spurs, whereas people in the stadium, because they paid the money, they're expecting, but there is an expectation there that they are owed everything that they desire. And that's just not football. You know, we're never going to be Chelsea, who can spend 600 million in the season. We're never going to be City, who can consistently buy their first choice. And we're never going to be United, where we can throw big fees at single players. And if you're now worried about Newcastle, Arsenal, then your head's in the wrong place, because we're not going to be that. And if you want the club to be bought by a Gulf state like that, or a conglomerate, or like a whatever, an investment firm, then maybe, you know, football means something different to you than it does to people like us. And that's not like an elitist stance. I'm not trying to say you're not a real fan, because again, that's a stupid narrative. But I think you're not a real fan if you can boo your players and be proud of that every game. I think you need to support the club, because realistically, if we then start performing well and you're cheering those same players on, you're just a massive hypocrite. And yeah, that doesn't sit well with me at all. It actually makes me so angry.
That's the thing. Like, you look at Harry Kane and how the fans are like desperate for him to stay. The fans are desperate for him to stay because he's a brilliant player. It's as simple as that. You look at what the other players in that squad must think. And we did get some insight into that from Lloris. He was like, I can't believe what happened in terms of booing Sanchez. These players, they're not cattle. They're people. And I know they're treated as cattle. But you think of the fickleness of the fans towards these players. If you're someone like Harry Kane, unless you have a massive ego, which probably all footballers have, you must be thinking, that could be me. If I all of a sudden I get a bad knee injury and I've lost some yards of pace and whatever, then the fans could be booing me. And the truth is, that could happen. I know people would say, oh, that would never happen. The Spurs fans would never be Harry Kane. But if Harry Kane had something happen to him like the original Ronaldo and comes back like overweight and stuff, I think the fans would boo him. So why the hell do you expect loyalty from those players when you turn on them in an instant? We even saw it with Son this season. The amount of goals he scored for us in the past, people forget that within, if you have like 5, 6, 7 games playing badly, then people forget so quickly.
Yeah, I think you're gradually starting to see it now. Not in the stadium, but on social media. I think you're starting to see it now with Kulusevski too. Obviously, Pedro Porro had to delete his socials over the weekend because he probably knew what was going to be on there. And he's just joined the club and he's probably thinking, what the fuck have I done? Why the fuck have I come here? And then you have to think about potential signings that are coming in, seeing that. It's not that it's just happened once. As you guys have mentioned, it's happened multiple times now. Why would you want to join a club that's got that sort of atmosphere? Why would a manager want to come to this sort of club that has such a fickle fan base, that will be booing the team every other week, booing their own players every other week, has a hierarchy who doesn't really know what they want? Why would you come into that sort of job? I don't understand it. And I think fans need to realise the damage that this sort of stuff can actually do to a club. I know they're all professionals at the end of the day, and they're getting very well paid to do so. but it doesn't excuse the fact that you're getting booed. You shouldn't have to go. Your family's in the stands. They hear the abuse as it is. So for you to get booed as you're coming off the pitch is humiliating. And you can see why Sanchez was so upset about it. So the fans need to realise how much of an effect this can have, not just on the club, but just on the people themselves. They're not robots. They're human beings at the end of the day. They're trying their best out there. They're not going out there to fuck up on purpose. So for me personally, above all, it was the hierarchy at the club that was the number one reason for me wanting to stay away for a bit. And then obviously the football. But now it's the fans, man. The fans have really pushed me away this weekend. And I went at the game. I went watching the game. But it's, like you said, Cosmo, it's not the club that I know. It's not the club that I know.
Yeah, and I think a point that you raised earlier, Jed, I think this is something that's been building for a while in terms of like booing to get Nuno out, booing players and whatnot. And it's only getting worse. And like you say, it's just an awful look. And I don't think people are going to want to join Spurs. And yeah, it's going to have massive implications, I think. Yeah, I mean, Spurs will have a reputation of having a toxic fan base. And if you think players don't talk to other players and say, look, you don't want to go there, you're just going to get treated like shit. Plus, they probably also buy into that banner of you're not going to win a trophy either. good luck getting players, man. Good luck getting players when you're acting like that. Because Eddie, like you said as well, we're not Real Madrid. We boo these players, but it's not like we're just going to bounce back and win a trophy. There's less than a minute on the Zoom, so I'm just going to go to a quick break. But yeah, we'll come back in part two. All right, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and Eddie, you kind of alluded to it earlier about the kind of like the underlying kind of like racial undertones of all this, is the fact that when you look at the players that have been booed by Spurs in recent histories, Ndombele, which, Jed, like you say, there was a reason for it in terms of him trudging off the pitch slowly. So that's probably more adjacent to the whole Hossam Ghali thing. But then you've had two players booed for playing poorly. And in my opinion, it's not for the fact that they're not trying, in Emerson Royal and Sanchez. And when you put the three together, all of these guys are black men. And they did discuss this on the Athletic pod, but we pointed it out in the group chat before as well. And we were just like, this is, again, booing your players regardless is a bad look. But the fact that it's been three black guys that have been booed, it does speak to, and I think Charlie Eccleshire spoke really well about this, in the fact that it's probably not conscious racism. It's probably not the fact they're not doing it because these are black guys, but it is like an unconscious bias, in the sense that I think they feel emboldened to do it on a subconscious level because they see these black players potentially in a different way to how they see other players. Because off the top of my head, can't remember if you, Jed, you mentioned it already, but like, you know, people like Perisic have played awfully this season. We've seen scapegoats of the past, Winks, Dyer, Davis, Lloris even. They've never been booed. And at times, I would say, for example, like Winks, I would say he has been like a much bigger scapegoat for abuse in the past than like the likes of Sanchez. But I think there is a thing to the fact that I think fans do feel emboldened to do this because of their unconscious racism. I honestly do. And like, you see the way, so Dyer has been awful for a long period of the season, but you don't see Dyer have the language of being called like a donkey, for example. Whereas I feel like you will see, for me, that's a racially loaded term at this point, because I only ever see people say that about the likes of Emerson, Sanchez, Sissoko in the past. I just don't think these fans would call those players like a donkey. And like, it's another reason why I'm just so upset with the fan base.
I think those are the players that that we like are immediately affected, because we've actually seen it like in the stadium, like a lot. But like, just think about the kind of And I, obviously, politically, I don't align with Lucas at all. And I think he's a pretty despicable person in that regard. But, like, even, like, the narratives around Lucas, like, that's another person in the Spurs squad that has, like, suffered, like, the same language in terms of, like, his football, and the same with Sessegnon, like, that kind of language has been used to describe him. And I just don't see the same thing with the players like Kulusevski this season, who's had a pretty large barren patch in terms of like him affecting the game. And you just don't see that. You just see language like, oh, he just doesn't look good on the ball, he looks tired, or he's been poor since he's come back from injury. And the thing is, they always say, you know, but he has like the quality. He has the quality. Every time that he has the quality. Whereas with Emerson Royale, when we bought him, he was a right back. And we know his defensive qualities. Like we've seen his defensive qualities. But no one's saying, you know, oh, he has the quality to be a good right back, but he's just not fit for the system. Everyone's just like, he's a horrible footballer, he's a donkey, he's this and he's that. And then it came to a head when he was getting booed on the pitch. And it takes so much mental fortitude to like actually come back from that and perform the way he did before he got injured. But you just don't see any of the white players in our team have to do that. I know that, you know, Winks has been shipped off and Lo Celso has been shipped off. But Lo Celso, another one, who I thought was just absolutely dreadful before he got shipped off. You didn't get that kind of language. And it's just like indicative of a kind of wider narrative and like the language used around black players. You know, there was, we've kind of alluded to it in the past and sometimes even joked about it, but like people do not talk about the qualities, the technical qualities of black players the way they do of white players. And that's just a fact. They talk about their physical qualities, even when those physical attributes are not, you know, aligned with the actual player. But they will not talk about the technical qualities of these players. And I just think that kind of builds into that narrative, because if you talk about physical qualities and then you liken them to like beasts or animals, then of course the first thing that people are going to do when they're not playing well is refer to these players as animals, as donkeys, as whatever. So people are going to be like, oh, don't, you shouldn't make it about race or whatever. It's not about race. Like any player who's playing as bad as him would like get booed, but we haven't seen it. So the reality is there has to be this kind of undertone, because yeah, I just don't see how you can attribute it to anything else, whether it's conscious or unconscious.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, it's completely grim. It is grim. Just when you see the names of the people that have been booed, it's just an awful look for the club.
Also, you'll see it not just for Spurs. You'll see it for like loads of players. Like, If I just think of a few, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, for instance, who is by far and away one of the best defensive right backs in the country. This is not hyperbole. You can look at his stats. You can look at him when he plays. He is a terrific defensive fullback. The problem is that United didn't need a defensive fullback. They needed a fullback that can bomb up the pitch, like someone like Luke Shaw, for instance. But you can see the parallels. Two, you know, English fullbacks that have played for England in the past, whether it's at youth level or senior level. Luke Shaw, when he was playing poorly, people were saying he was bad, overweight, you know, just bad on the ball. When Aaron Wan-Bissaka's playing badly, oh, he looks like a deer on ice. He looks like Bambi. He looks like he's a donkey. He runs like a spider. Whatever, just stuff like that. And you can see like the difference in narrative between the two players. And realistically, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is a fantastic player. And we've seen it this season. When United have been playing well, he's been playing well. Sorry, the other way around. When he's been playing well, United have been playing well. Defensively, they've been great. But that's just like one example. Like players like Zaha, Eze, Elise, for like people like Crystal Palace, when they're not playing well, they get called like donkeys or like they're you know, or their attitude stinks or something like that. Like that's another one. Like their attitude just is so bad or whatever. But we're talking about genuinely technically excellent players. And then that doesn't get brought up as much. And it's really tough because I think people like Vieira, when he was managing, he was trying to protect those players from that sort of thing. And, you know, Crystal Palace are now playing well, so we won't see it as much. But it must be difficult for someone like Hodgson to have that same effect, like being able to like father these players, because that isn't someone that they can look up to, that someone that in terms of like they've been through the same things that they've been through in the Premier League. We saw that Thierry Henry was talking about it during the Champions League regarding Lukaku, and just that fast, that the refereeing fast during that game against Juventus. And the fact that Thierry Henry was saying that, like, you know, just like when I was playing, it was exactly the same. And the assumption is that the players need to be the bigger person in this situation. And if Sanchez was to flip off the crowd, if he was to tell the crowd to do one in the stadium, and he was just like, I don't want to play for this club anymore, he'll be vilified. He will go down in history as a villain. When how do you expect people to combat the abuse that they're receiving?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think another thing with the booing, like the other notable example of it that I can think of was Aboué. You know, again, it's another black player, and it's just I do think fans feel emboldened to make their displeasure known at black players much more than white players. And Eddie, like you say, it definitely links to the language that we use to talk about these players. You know, like, you know, we don't even think of donkey in a literal sense of being, you're calling this person an animal, but ultimately when you call someone a donkey, you're just dehumanizing them. And of course, if you dehumanize someone, you see them as more of a thing that can just be like vilified and booed. And yeah, it's really, really depressing. And I think I think people need to kind of try and check their sort of like unconscious biases on these things. And you know, even what you were talking about with the whole Palace thing, like, I feel really uncomfortable when I see memes about Roy Hodgson with these, talking about, there was that quote about, it's an orchestra.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm. And then people saying like, oh, Hodgson with all these young black players, as if he's like the manager of some drill artists or something. That was the tweet that like went viral. I just thought, I'm not liking that. That's not even some kind of covered or unconscious racism. For me, that was just like racist, basically. And people just feel emboldened to say these things, and it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
And you saw Thierry Henry and Micah Richards on that Champions League coverage actually getting quite frustrated about it, because they even said themselves that it's pointless talking about it. They feel like they're constantly banging their heads against the wall and nothing's changing. And it's correct, because there's been that clip on Twitter going around doing the rounds recently of when Gary Neville spoke about the incident regarding Rudiger at Spurs, I think it was, when he said that one of our fans racially abused, or he heard racial abuse from the crowd. And the presenter said that those are the views of Gary Neville, and not the views of Sky Sports. And if your main broadcaster for the Premier League is saying stuff like that, then like you say, it only emboldens people to be, it encourages the narrative that it's like, oh, they're making it all about racism. They're just pulling the race card. And you need to take these things seriously. And I think, again, with Sky, with BT, there are some commentators on there and pundits on there who speak out actively against this sort of stuff. but there's still a lot of old-fashioned people on those stands who, for them back in the day, it was anything goes. You can say anything to anyone. And I think it really comes across when they discuss these sort of topics, when you have someone like a Souness or a Keane, and they don't really engage in it at all. And people lap it up.
They say they need to get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to get on with it. And I think it's obviously part of a bigger issue within football. Like you mentioned with the Lukaku thing. And I wouldn't even say it's worse. Maybe it is worse in the foreign countries, in like Italy and Spain and that. It seems to happen a lot there. But don't get me wrong, England has just as big of a problem as those countries do. And until football gets a proper hold on it and starts to give out the right punishments and sanctions, I think this is just what we're going to see. And it's sad because footballers shouldn't have to go to work doing something they love and feel like they're going to get racially abused at any minute, whether it's conscious or unconscious.
Yeah.
And I think one point is that I think someone like, for instance, Granit Xhaka, who had that situation a couple seasons ago where he was getting jeered and booed as he came off the pitch with the captain's armband and whatever. If that were to happen for any player if they were wearing a captain's armband or whatever, wearing a shirt, and they did what Xhaka did, do you think that they have any way that they can come back into that team that the fans will accept? Mm-hmm. For me, no. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a comeback story if Xhaka is a black player and he does that. And I may be wrong, but football has shown me that I'm probably not. And I think that the fact that, yeah, that he's been able to have a comeback to the point where, like, every single fan that you see is like, oh yeah, like, I was wrong about Xhaka, I apologise, Xhaka, like, he's like amazing, he's an integral part of the team. Like, the caveat to to all of these players is that only when they start to like actually play brilliantly, not just good, but like be like amazing, will these fans like accept them. And so it just reduces them to a commodity or like say like an animal, like, you know, if you give me what I want, then I will recognize you just as like a normal person. And like the kind of the longer this goes on, because like it's obviously it's apparent when you're little, like it existed when you were smaller, but you don't understand it or recognize it. But like the older you get and like the more it happens, the more that you're aware of it, like the further you're just going to be disconnected because you don't want to associate yourself with that. There's already like this feeling that football is full of people like that, you know, people who get drunk, they abuse players, and you know, that's the assumption, the classic football fan, and I don't want to be associated with that. And if the club is like emboldening like these fans, or like these fans are feeling emboldened to continue to do these things, and I'm just going to feel further and further disconnected from Spurs. So yeah, it is something that's really sad and like shocking and needs to be addressed, because it will just continue otherwise.
Yeah, agreed. And I don't even know how to move this conversation along, really. So it's going to feel very silly to kind of, what's the word, segue in this way. Like, this is like an impossible segue. This is where I need to be like some dead behind the eyes skinwalker Sky Sports presenter, which they all seem to be. I was thinking about this earlier. I was thinking, how do they transition like so easily between things? And when you actually think about it, it's because they're all fucking dead behind the eyes.
Like, they're not engaging with those conversations. They're only facilitating them.
Yeah, exactly. I've never known the name of the guy who presents Sky Sports. Is he called like Dean Jones or something?
David, I think.
He's just like a blank canvas.
That's like just a John Smith. Do you know what I mean? It's a John Smith.
He might as well just be ChatGPT because like I don't know, like... there's nothing discernible about him. There's no like personality. you would never go for a pint with him. Equally, someone like Jake Humphrey. I was thinking about this earlier. Like, I was thinking every presenter in the whole of TV history, probably an absolute freak. Like,
yeah,
I would take to hang out with. What's that, Eddie?
Unless it's like a Steve Harvey, like where they inject their own personality into it.
Yeah, true. I mean, I was going to say, like, I would hate to go for a drink with, like, well, I know he's dead, but like Bruce Forsyth, like old people loved him. Old people loved him. He would be unbearable in real life. He would be the weirdo propping up the pub. So in that sense, I just feel... I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can just go, right, let's talk about this other thing. And I still feel ridiculous saying it. But should we get rid of Stellini now? It feels like it literally doesn't matter, but should we get rid of Stellini now? And should we just go to maybe Ryan Mason, Harry Redknapp, Glenn Hoddle, Ledley King, anyone?
Glenn Middleton.
Glenn Middleton. Yeah.
The reason why he's not here is because he's at Hotspur away.
Yeah, he's in negotiations.
I don't know. I think I don't know if you differ on this, Jed. Like, what would it change? Do you genuinely think that at this point of the season, Ryan Mason's going to like change the formation? We don't have the facilities for it. So realistically, we're forced to play the same way. Until the season ends, unless we change to a midfield three, and then you'll have like the likes of Romain Mundell like being like a first choice on the bench, basically, like because we have no midfielders. So I don't know what would that change. I think like tactically, of course we were poor on the weekend, but like Tottenham now are the top of the list in terms of. Individual errors leading to like goals, directly leading to goals.
Is that same as under Jose?
Fault? Yeah, is that the manager's fault? Are you sure that's the manager's fault? Because tactically, we might be poor, but you can't account for that amount of individual errors. Maybe by not playing the players, maybe, but.
Well, I think when you set up in such a counter-attacking way, you make it hard for yourself, and you make it so that when you do make an individual error, it's much more likely to lead to a goal. Whereas
this is what I always said under Jose, is that the fact that we know we have defenders that are very, very shaky at best. So playing a system where you constantly put those players under pressure, basically forcing them into mistakes. I agree with you, Eddie. I think it's definitely a mix of both. We know the defenders aren't good enough, but we also played a system that, and we have played a system for the last 3 years that puts them under immense pressure. We seem to want to play out the back with the ball. And we still don't have the players for that. We have probably one or two players who can do that. So of course you're going to see these errors time and time again. In terms of Stellini, again, I struggle to care if he's there or not. I'm at that point now, like, I just want the season done. We've got three games. Our next three games, we're probably going to lose. And people aren't coming here to hear me just say, oh, yeah, we're going to lose that. But it's the reality. We've got United, Newcastle and Liverpool. We're nowhere near that level. And if we keep going the way we're going... Honestly, I think we miss out on Europe altogether, and maybe that's a good thing. It probably won't be for the club in terms of revenue, but I think we could do with a season without it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one of the things I was thinking, like with regards to what we were saying about the fans having more power and stuff, I've kind of gone off the idea of Poch coming back again in terms of just the fact that this. Genuinely just feels like a populist movement at this point where this is the latest thing to shout for. You shout, we want Enoch out and we want Poch back. I think people would very quickly get upset and turn on Poch if results weren't to go our way. And right now, the way things are going with the stench that's around the club, I think that's quite likely to happen. I think I would rather have like a blank slate with someone like Slot coming in. But I also feel like Levy now doesn't have the political power to even do that. I feel like if he tries to have a blank slate with Slot, sells a lot of players, and it completely fails, and we have a crap squad next season, it's going to be 10 times worse than it is even right now.
Yeah.
Do you not think as well, though, Cosmo, that a lot of this fan discontent has been caused by Poch, in a sense? In a sense that where we left things with Poch, everyone was almost outraged that he got sacked, whether it was the right or wrong decision at the time. The club made bad decisions, which meant he had to go eventually. But over the past 18 months, the constant pining for Poch is, it's going to undermine any manager that's going to get there. I don't think they're going to have the time. We've mentioned it on the podcast weeks ago, and I think Len mentioned it last week, that if the manager, new manager don't get up, who isn't Poch, doesn't get off to a good start, it's so easy to keep chanting his name. It's easy to want that back just because we don't know what could have been if he doesn't come back. And in a sense, like me personally, and Eddie agrees, we need to move on from Poch. I think it needs to be someone else. I agree with you, Cosmo, a clean slate with someone else and give him the keys. But the fans just can't seem to let it go. And I think, like we've said all along, until we just get him back and try it, I don't think there's any way we can move on as a club, unfortunately. I think it's just, he's always going to be there in the background. We're going on a bad run. Poch, bring Poch back. We lose 3 games in a row. Bring Poch back. It's too easy to just want him back. And I think we might just need to do it, just so if it goes well, it goes well. Happy days. If it doesn't, we can say it's been done and we can forget about it. Or hopefully he goes Madrid, does a really good job there, and we can forget about it because he's out of our... He's not going to be interested because he's doing a good job at Madrid. Either way, one of those things needs to happen, because I don't feel that Spurs can move on unless it does.
Yeah, that's a good point. Eddie, what do you think?
Oh, well, you know me. I agree with Jed with the Poch point. It just... Like, going backwards at this point is going to be beneficial to nobody. The fans, it's going to... For us, if we go back to Poch, it's like... We've talked about this before. Like, the relationship aspect, the abusive relationship aspect of it. It's just like, we go back to Poch because it's easy, because it's comforting, because we know what to expect, because we know that there was affection there. There was, like, man management there. There was, like, an arm-around-the-shoulder approach that, like the last few managers have, like, are the opposite of that. And so, yeah, it's just it's like a comfort thing. Like, Mourinho was the same for Chelsea, except Mourinho was successful. Mourinho won the Premier League, then he did it again. And then you have to, like, you have to think about it in the sense that, you know, we... In order for Tottenham to evolve, we have to, like, and if we want to win things, then we have to go and win those things. And then if we want to look back at Poch and be like, okay, we've built a better structure, we've got a better team, that would you like to come back and try again? Then I'd be up for that. But right now, we're basically handing him we're giving him a guillotine. We're asking him to put his neck on the guillotine. And then we're just like, as long as you, like, perform well, then this won't come down. But the reality is that the only thing that's holding up that guillotine is, like, I don't know, a mouse. And so realistically, that is just going to fall on his head, and we're going to be back to the same place where the toxicity around the club is going to be awful, the mood's going to be awful. We're going to have lost a lot of players, and then where do you go from there? Like, mediocrity, mid-table mediocrity. I don't want to see that. So, yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, and I think that pretty much concludes the N17 podcast for this week. Thank you for listening, as always. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star on Spotify. Follow us on the socials at N17 Pod. Thanks for joining me, boys.
Cheers, mate.